breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, well, you might find.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this hour. We're enjoying the music as well as happening there in my studio.
Brandon takes coaching. Doug, he may have had a hint this morning on what song to play.
It was a pretty strong hint.
He's coachable.
Put it out on Twitter.
He's coachable.
Bill McCosh, yeah. Republican strategist. Joe Zepecki, Democratic strategist. What to talk about today? Oh, my goodness.
Just vamp.
Fun stuff.
We got like six or seven Max jokes.
All right. No, we only have one match. Max is already working on another project for me, so he's kind of sidelined from his joke thing. Right now. I keep the boy busy. And by the way, I know people are interested in the Max story. Made the All-Star team.
All right.
Way to go.
As the youngest player in the league.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, I think his uncle Corey, who played Major League Baseball, probably had something to do with it, but as in training. But good job, Max. So enjoy the weekend. All right. Gentlemen, I want to hear your takes on this proposal, this deal. What is this between Voss, Lemahue, Evers, all who I reached out to? So far, we just have Cavalier Johnson from Milwaukee.
None of those you got.
Yeah.
I
will have the governor on Monday. He's already agreed. I just have to work out the time. And the other two are welcome, and I've sent invitations. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to start with you, Bill. What is this?
So let me explain why Brandon played the Stones. You can't always get what you want. We have divided government in Madison. We have Republicans controlling the state Senate with a supermajority. Republicans have a very large majority, not a supermajority, in the state assembly, and we have a Democratic governor. That's the reality of our political landscape here in the state of Wisconsin. So you can't always get what you want, but sometimes you get what you need. And I would say that conservatives, particularly Voss and Lemahue, did exceptionally well. I've been in and around the Capitol since 1985, believe it or not. So 38 years. I would say this is the most historic and meaningful bipartisan grand bargain I've ever seen. So kudos all around. Governor Evers gets credit. His chief of staff, Maggie Gao, his policy director, Jenny Dye, they also get credit. But I want to focus on the Republican side of this, and I'll let Joe focus on the other side. So what's in this deal? Shared revenue increase for every community here in the state of Wisconsin, whether you're a village, town, county, city, you're going to get a minimum of 15% increase, largest in history. The repeal of the personal property tax, $180 million, that impacts mostly small businesses, but large businesses too. But it's a nuisance for small businesses and frankly, for communities. The largest increase in funding for charter and choice schools in the history of the state of Wisconsin. School choice was started in the state of Wisconsin by my former boss, Tommy Thompson. Not only is this the largest increase in the funding, but it will provide the biggest pathway to expansion of charter and choice in Wisconsin since Tommy Thompson was governor. That's 30 years. That's a historic increase. And then the literacy bill, I don't think got enough attention yesterday, but Republicans, as part of this grand bargain, have a $50 million effort to help raise the reading scores of our kids here in the state of Wisconsin through the science of reading, the using phonics. This will help train teachers how to teach kids how to read the right way, like all of us learned how to read. Two-thirds of our kids don't read at grade level. This may be the most important long-term item that's in this package that will get the least amount of attention. Joe and I have talked about this before. You and I have, Steve. I mean, our kids need to read. If we want to be the number one state in America, we have to start by making sure that our kids can read, and I think that's a significant part of the package. I'm going to let Joe talk, and then I want to come back to process, because there were certain points in this process where Robin Voss did some things that really impacted this outcome that I want to highlight.
But yeah, I want to get to the nuts and bolts, but give me the Democratic reaction to this proposed deal.
Yeah, I mean, Bill talked about a lot of the particulars, but not the piece of this that is public school K-12 funding. Governor Evers.
$1 billion.
Yeah, $1 billion. $2/3.
Largest ever.
Two-thirds commitment by the state, which is fantastic. It's good for every school in the state of Wisconsin. So there is a lot to like here. I have to defend myself. You guys called me Eeyore for the last month, but I believe that a better deal was possible. That's why I'm wearing the Believe shirt today. And here we are. This is a better deal. I agree with Bill. Nobody got everything. With the $7 billion surplus, they were always going to get something done. I long thought that raising the per student amount for the choice schools was going to be part of it. And sure enough, here we are. So the point I want to make is I think Governor Evers also deserves a lot of credit for being smart about when to engage and how to engage, not being out there, you know, every single day using the bully pulpit. And I actually see some parallels between Evers' approach on this and Biden's approach on the debt limit deal from last week, where you've got these guys who have been around the block just can't, you know what? I don't need to be out there mixing it up every single day. Sometimes strategic silence gives them a stronger hand to play at the negotiating table. That appears to be what happened. Good for Governor Evers. Good for the legislative Republicans for working with them. It's a good deal. It's a lot better than it was.
We got to take a break. I want to get to the process and the nuts and bolts, because there's a lot of things that have to happen to make this, you know, come to fruition. Bill McCashin, Joe Sopecki. Of course, you're listening to the Political Power Hour on WTMJ. Thanks for joining our regular Friday conversation. Bill McCashin, Republican strategist. Joe Sopecki, Democratic side of the aisle. We'll get to the Trump stuff in a bit. I want to spend a little more time on the...
Oh, there was Trump news?
Yes, I spent way... My wife goes, what are you doing? Way too much time last night watching all the networks. Fox was out of their... They were out of their mind yesterday.
This is my shocked face.
Yeah.
They're trying to make up with Trump, just in case.
We had best friends breaking up over that indictment story. Yeah. It's like, come on,
people. We'll get to it. We'll get to it.
All right, so I talked about the nuts and bolts. Bill talked about process. There needs to be two votes in Milwaukee County and the Milwaukee Common Council that need to happen. Two-thirds votes in both of those bodies to make this a reality. Am I wrong on this?
To do one big part of it. Right?
Yeah. The Milwaukee part.
Yes. And so let's talk about the Milwaukee part so for the listeners, right? So in the original deal, the Milwaukee would have had to go to the voters and pass a referendum in order to get, what was it, 0.375% increase
in the county.
In the county tax.
2% in the city.
Right. This deal takes away the public referendum, puts the accountability on the Milwaukee Common Council and the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors with a 2/3 vote of each. It just happens. And then that sales tax goes into effect. And then those units of government will have an easier time meeting their fiscal challenges, which we know are severe. They are many. They range from continuation of basic services to honoring pension obligations, some strings attached, more than I would like to see. But hey, the Republican Party is the party of Madison knows best. And so they're still telling Milwaukee how to spend that money. And they're saying it has to go to police and fire. And that still makes the rest of the budget work a little bit better and makes the coming fiscal cliff more navigable for those units of government.
This referenda idea turned out to be the linchpin of the entire deal, right? And it's how Republicans got the massive increase in funding for charter and choice schools. And let's sort of play this out, because for the listeners, it may not have been obvious what was going on here. So the Assembly actually passed a version of the shared revenue bill 3 weeks ago. And that day, the Speaker, Robin Voss, said, I am done negotiating. The same day, the Majority Leader, Devin Lemieux, said, we don't agree with that referendum idea. We'd prefer to have the City Council and the County Board take those votes. Last Sunday, on Upfront, a local show here, statewide mostly, the Majority Leader changed his tune and said, I don't have the votes to do that. That was a signal. That was a very big signal.
Well, so, changing your tune or just not having the votes. I mean, he recognized the obvious.
It was clear he wasn't digging in his heels.
Right.
It appeared a week ago when we were on the show that Voss was outnumbered 2-1. By Sunday, the math had changed. It was 2-1 against Evers on that idea.
Another reason why I call Robin Voss the...
He's a master.
Most powerful politician.
He's absolutely a master, and he played 4D chess on this whole thing.
Yeah.
So Wednesday of this week, the Speaker says, this deal is either going to happen this week or it's not going to happen this week. And if the governor doesn't come around on this, I'm just going to take Milwaukee out and pass the shared revenue for everybody else. Holy cats. I mean, people in the Capitol were going berserk. That can't possibly be the deal. 6 hours later, that same night, they had a deal with the governor. Now, it all came down to this referendum, but Joe talked about the bully pulpit. I think Voss used his masterfully. I think LeMahieu gets undersold in this thing. I don't think it was an accident that he said last week that he didn't have the votes on the referendum. He was sending a signal to the governor that you better start moving on this thing. And I will give the governor credit here. You got to know when to hold them and when to fold them, as Kenny Rogers has said. And he cut the deal at the right time. And I think he got what he really wanted in the budget, which is the massive increase in school aids and special education, categorical aids and mental health. There's $30 million for mental health in there. And the literacy the governor wanted, this is actually much bigger than he had recommended, but he got a lot of what he wanted. But from a conservative standpoint, there'll be detractors of the majority leader and the speaker on this. I'm telling you, they got some things in this bill they could not have gotten any other way. There are six items in this bill that Tony Evers has vetoed at least once, and some of them, including literacy, he's vetoed twice. So I would say Voss in particular, LeMahieu also, they played this thing masterfully, and they got an unbelievable deal.
Let me look at it from this perspective. Maybe it's three adults representing very different interests, sort of, one Senate, Assembly, governor's office, decided finally that we are tired of listening or hearing from our local communities that we're getting beat up, savaged, destroyed by your policies, your administration, whatever, your leadership in the legislature, and said, figure this stuff out. And that's what happened. They got in a room and figured it out.
Well, and they listened, right? Also on Wednesday, the speaker got asked again about this referendum idea. And remember, his house had already passed the referendum version of this. He said, never say never. That was a clear signal to the governor, I'm willing to move on this thing if you give me what I'm looking for.
Well, either side can pass whatever they want. They have to work it out.
Right. Yeah. They have to work it out. It's divided government. And I think both sides can claim some victories here. As a conservative, I can say I'm just amazed, literally amazed at what Voss and LeMahieu were able to get in this package.
Yeah, you mentioned the choice and the private school. That's a big win. I'm going to have a guest on at the 10 o'clock hour celebrating the win they got so far.
I would imagine the governor is going to be hearing from some of his allies for the next 6 weeks until he signs this budget saying, how could you agree to that? Right?
Because he got a big chunk of money from the public schools.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the criticism from the Democratic side has long been that these choice schools have established a second, system of public education that is not sustainable in the long term because you are taking money out of public schools and putting them into private schools. Analyses by the Wisconsin Policy Forums and others have found that a lot of the folks accepting that state money for private school are parents whose kids were already in private school. This has been a long running fight. It was during the Walker era that they sort of lifted the statewide enrollment caps. This fight was always going to continue for years and years to come. And, $7 billion, again, when you have a surplus of that size, there was room to negotiate here. And that's what they did. And nobody should have gotten everything they wanted. That's not how this works.
Yeah, and it doesn't equal the funding between charter and choice schools and public schools. The average statewide is about 15 grand. At the top end under this deal, 12. Charter and choice schools would get 12. Yeah. So it closes the gap for sure in a very meaningful way. I don't want to minimize it. It's a very meaningful, a historic increase.
A lot of texters.
But it doesn't equal the funding.
A lot of texters saying this is an example where divided government can work cooperatively.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I still think that we might all agree, boy, why did this take so long, right? For years, we've known that municipalities were struggling. The fiscal cliff gets closer and closer, and then it's now it's time to deal. And, just remember, at the end of the day, state legislators and lawmakers are kind of just like your kids with their homework. The deadline, the looming crisis.
Deadlines are
really
important.
Focuses the mind.
It creates urgency.
Look, I got to get to break here, but elections happened. And for Republicans, I said some of the recent results in elections are wake-up calls. We're going to have to work together.
Yeah.
Evers is going to be around for a while. Let's try to figure some stuff out. I said that when it happened. I think it's come to fruition. I used that word twice in the last 2 minutes, but I'm not apologizing. It's a good word. Joseph Pecky, Bill McCosian, we'll break. We got bottom of the hour news. Then we're going to get to the former president. All those hijinks and indictments. 7 counts, apparently. That's all coming up right here on WTMJ. Thanks for joining us on Friday. Every Friday, the Political Power Hour with Bill McCashin on the right side of the aisle. From the Republican perspective, Joe Zepecki from Zepecki Communications. On the other side of the aisle, the left-leaning, liberal side of the political aisle.
Except for when you guys tell me I'm becoming more conservative than you are.
Which happens from time to time.
Every once in a while. Because you know
we're
what?
Molding you.
You use common sense. Both
grasshopper.
You guys celebrate common sense and logic, which is why you sit in those chairs. I'm still wondering why I'm sitting in this chair, but we'll have that conversation.
We'll figure it out one of these weeks.
On a different day. All right. I spent most of my evening, probably 4 to 5 hours worth, from late afternoon into the evening bedtime for me, which is 9:30, watching all the coverage.
Wasn't golf outing last? Didn't you have golf league last night? Wasn't that more important?
I didn't have golf yesterday.
You didn't?
No. Otherwise, it would have been on the golf course.
Yeah.
And I probably would have had a better time.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it was gorgeous out spent. Last night.
Yeah.
So, again, same thing with the shared revenue deal. Thoughts? I have some strong thoughts about what all this means. And let's just start with you, Bill. Former president, the leading at this moment, apparently the leading Republican nominee for the nomination to represent Republicans in the presidential election of 2024. What does this all mean?
It's exhausting. I will make a commitment to your listeners who are Trumpers. I will never attack them directly or personally. I'm not a fan of the president. I voted for him twice. I think we can do better, and I think we should move on to younger options that are focused on the future, not the past. And This stuff is exhausting. And, you know, for people that want to win the White House and make some significant policy changes, I don't think any of this helps. It probably helps Trump in a primary because it dials in his hardcore base even stronger. And he's going to get, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 2 or 3 months of free media around all this stuff. And I think the complicating factor here from an optics standpoint is the appearance of two justice systems, right? There's one for Trump, and this is where I'm sympathetic to him, and a different one for Biden, right? I mean, let's just take the Hunter Biden case itself. The FBI has had the Hunter Biden laptop for 5 years. They could have done a full colonoscopy on that thing in 5 weeks. That's clearly a cover-up that's going on there. They're hiding something. Why is that? Yet they can quickly get to indicting a former president, which is unprecedented, with very little effort at all, right? I mean, how are these facts so much stronger than what's on the Biden laptop? A. B. Yesterday, a credible source that the FBI itself has paid over $200,000 in the last several years disclosed that he's confident that Joe Biden took a $5 million bribe from Burisma in Ukraine. Well, that, you know, this indictment happens on the same day. It all looks like wag the dog to me. So I think the Biden should extract himself from this.
He has.
Garland should extract himself.
Well, they have a special counsel, so it's really not.
It just doesn't pass the smell test as far as fairness is concerned. And listen.
What would be fair? Other than to ignore it.
Well, I think the best thing for the country would be two different candidates. No Biden, no Trump.
Yeah,
but
sure.
And if pigs had wings, they might fly. Listen, the only time in American history that I'm aware of that somebody was investigated and then the FBI came out and said, we're not charging them, Hillary Rodham Clinton. That was James Comey before the 2016 election. You want to talk about Hunter Biden's laptop till you're blue in the face. Maybe they've had it for 5 years and did a full colonoscopy and they have found that no crimes occurred. That's the way this works. Pretty easy to disclose then, don't you think? But that's the thing. The system of justice doesn't work that way. It never has. And now, listen, this is not about Hunter. To me, this is not about Joe Biden. We know what this is about.
Two systems of justice.
What I believe is America is a big enough, strong enough, good enough country that we can go through this process. And if the former president has committed crimes and is found guilty by a jury of his peers, then he's guilty of a crime.
Yeah.
Right? And so you're talking about two systems of justice. We have no system of justice if anyone is above the law. We have always said no one should be above the law. But here's what I would counsel. Let's just wait. We don't know. And the worst thing that's happening today and last night is before we have even seen the speaking indictment. People rushing to judge, say whether this is, oh, we got him, or, oh, this is a witch hunt, or, oh, this is a separate system of justice. We don't know. We will know very soon, but the elected officials and the folks who are rushing out and presuming that they know whether this is valid or invalid, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. It is entirely possible that they've got the goods on Trump. There are recordings of him talking about this. We don't know what he said, but we will soon enough. We can be patient. And part of the problem with our politics and the media ecosystem these days is everybody has to rush to know and to say what their take is. I'll have more to say on this Tuesday. I'd like to see the speaking indictment. I think, given what's at stake here and the magnitude of this, that these prosecutors feel pretty confident they've got a buttoned up case, because they wouldn't be bringing charges if they didn't. But I'll know more about that on Tuesday, and I'm happy to wait until then.
Two of those rush to judgment folks against this idea of going after the president, former president, is Derek Van Orden, congressman, and Senator Ron Johnson, have also already issued
know what they have on.
Absolutely. Here's my problem.
We've had guys like Charlie Kirk, who runs Turning Point USA, saying all of the GOP presidential candidates should suspend their campaign and go to Miami to be by the former president's side. That's ridiculous.
There's people outside of Mar-a-Lago last night. Here's the problem with the Hunter Biden sort of whataboutism. And I'm not saying that Hunter Biden, all of that stuff shouldn't be investigated. Do the exact same investigation you're doing on this in whatever specific.
It should be done already.
And crimes were committed, he should be charged. I'm really clear about that.
Yes, and he should be charged.
Yeah.
That's also, you have to make a connection to the president, because that's not, Hunter Biden's not president.
Well, that may have been done, established yesterday.
When I spent the last 3 years listening to nonsense about stolen elections, I'm going to have a little bit of a hard time accepting this version now of the Hunter Biden whataboutism. I'm just not going to do that, because I know what happened after 3 years. Nothing changed. There's always problems with elections. They're usually minute and correctable. All this nonsense from really smart people, many of whom I respect in elected positions, leadership positions, got all in on this nonsense so far up their you-know-whats that I cannot take them seriously anymore on this or anything. That's the problem with this whataboutism argument. I'm sick of hearing about it. If the president, former, current, did something wrong, they should be investigated just like everybody else. But here's the problem, gentlemen, and I want to take a break and we'll get to this. None of this is going to be resolved before the election next year. What in the hell are we going to do about it? Quick break. Gentlemen, Joseph Ekibel Makashin, Diane says we've just cleansed her soul with that conversation. So thank you, Diane, for that. Thanks for the loyal listen.
We do baseboards, too, if you need anything else clean.
We do.
Nobody does baseboards, so that's an add-on that usually costs extra.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. I'm talking about house cleaning now. Speaking of house cleaning, we have an election next year for president. I don't know if you guys are aware of this.
Really?
Yeah. Lots of things are going to happen. And another breaking news story. We're hosting the RNC and a debate here. Mm-hmm. So here's
my August 23rd.
Yes. See, Bill's got he's always got those right? details. I didn't even remember that. Now, here's the question. Timeline. He's got a pending case in New York City. We have this now rolling out in Miami next week on Tuesday in the afternoon. We have other cases swirling around the president. Georgia, of course, election interference, January 6th stuff. Any of this come to a resolution in a timeline, in a matter that affects the timeline of the rush to the presidency in next year?
Well, listen, I saw a video of a Florida man last night on the internet proclaiming his innocence, saying he would be proven innocent. So maybe his team should waive all of the pretrial motions and just proceed right to trial and put out their exculpatory evidence. Right? There are ways to speed up the wheels of justice.
He's not doing that.
Oh, you don't think so? Why?
Because he's milking.
Why wouldn't he do that?
Because this is a fundraising opportunity and a campaign opportunity. That's why.
Yeah. No, listen, there's not going to be resolution. There will be more indictments probably before there is any resolution. And so the political part of this becomes, what the heck do the other Republicans running for president against Donald Trump do with this? And I got to tell you, most of them yesterday took a tack that I just don't think is going to work. You know, we've got Chris Christie and Asa Hutchinson and Pence to a lesser degree being really sharp and going after Trump. The rest of them, doing this two systems of justice. He probably didn't do it. Why are you villainizing him? That's a really hard argument to make, to be like, I'm running against this guy. I think I'm better than this guy, but I got to spend half of my time defending him. That's tough. You know, as Bill knows, elections are about contrasts and clear lines and making sure the voters know the difference. It is going to be really, really hard for those candidates who are rushing to defend Trump to, in the next breath, say, but choose me instead. And so the Republican primary is going to remain messy is the polite word and not four-letter word I will use to describe it.
I am for the rule of law. I want to make sure your listeners understand that. If the president, the former president, did something wrong, he should be prosecuted. No different than if Biden or Hillary Clinton did something wrong, they should have been prosecuted. What I would say is I don't want to spend 16 months defending this guy, right? We are in this Trump vortex that we can't get out of as a party and move on to something positive, something future-like, something visionary. You know, we're constantly fighting old battles with this guy at the top of the ticket. And as a conservative, as a Republican, that's not a position I want to be in. There are other choices out there other than hunker down and let's defend this guy to the end of the earth, no matter what. He may be innocent. He may be guilty. I don't know the facts of it. Joe's right about that. Let's see how it plays out. But it's not going to play out before the election. And we are, as Republicans, are going to have to make a choice sooner than that. And I would encourage everyone listening saying there are better alternatives out there. Let's find somebody we can promote rather than defend.
You and I both know that there are conversations happening away from the media right now amongst thought leaders, conservative leaders in Wisconsin, about what are we going to do here about this election and other elections, getting the right candidate. I'm pretty open. To me, Donald Trump would be a waste of a vote, and I'm not voting for him. And I think if we put him in that position to be up against whoever the Democrats have, Joe Biden or whoever next steps in, if he can't be there, we're going to lose again.
Well, the sifting and winnowing has to happen faster than normal. You know, there's 10 candidates, maybe 11 right now.
Nine.
Is it nine?
Yeah, because Sununu said no.
Yeah. I actayliked him. I wish he would have
stayed. I thought the North Dakota governor made it 10.
He Burgum. Did. Borgum.
Borgum? Borgum, the ultra-rich guy.
Again, he's got no chance.
I think by mid-September, after a debate or two, we should be down to three. We really should.
Those three will be Trump, DeSantis.
And player to be named later. Okay. You know, we're going to see which of the other ones can sort of rise to the occasion.
I got to get to break here because we want to do a grab bag. I can't figure out Ron DeSantis. If the play is you want to beat Trump, you got to go after Trump.
You do.
Or is the play, I kind of like being governor of Florida. I don't want to do anything to upset all those Trump supporters in Florida, so I'm just going to play nicey-nice. That's a losing proposition.
It's a losing proposition.
God, you got to be smarter than that. If I figure it out, he can figure it out. He went to Harvard, for Pete's sakes.
And Yale.
And Yale. Who does both?
Right?
Is that common?
Yeah.
I'm going to hold my tongue. Hold my tongue.
They're in direct.
I think it's time for a land-grant college president
right?
in this country.
Enough of the University of Wisconsin. Madison.
Put your cowboy hat on there, buddy. Joe Zepecki, Bill McCashin will get to grab bag after this on WTMJ. If you listen to Political Power Hour with Joe Zepecki, Bill McCashin, you know that we wrap it up with a grab bag. Who wants to go first?
I got it. The grand bargain got done, but the state budget is not done. I was very disappointed this last week. Republicans on JFC stripped out $2.2 million request for a school safety tip line. This is an anonymous line that students and parents can use if they are concerned about bullying, but you know, kids with access to guns. $2.2 million to staff this for the next 2 years is a drop in the bucket. And in the last 2 years, there have been more than 7,000 tips about bullying and harassment and potential school shootings. This is a very, very inexpensive for a state with a $7 billion surplus way to keep our kids safe. And what could be more important than keeping our kids safe? I would urge everyone to contact their lawmakers, especially if they are Republicans and on joint finance, and ask them to put that $2.2 million back in so that 24-hour a day, 7 day a week tip line can remain in service.
Here's what I learned about that idea. There's people that are fans of bullies. Hard as that is to believe in this day and age, there are people that are fans of bullies. And they see those kinds of things. You're not letting kids be kids. You're tattletaling. That's why that reality is coming.
And in a world as dangerous as this one, we cannot take chances. Let's just be smart. This is a resource for kids. We know the last few years have been tough on them. This is a very cost-effective way to keep our kids just a little bit safer.
Joe McCutcheon.
If you need a good lobbyist, I know one. I'm gonna go to the grand bargain, too. I'm going to give some shout-outs here. On the shared revenue package, the two people that spent an inordinate amount of time, going back to last summer, State Senator Mary Felskowski, State Representative Tony Kurtz, get full credit for that shared revenue package. Obviously, the Speaker and the Majority Leader were deeply involved in that, as were others. But Felskowski and Kurtz on the historic deal for charter and choice schools. I'm going to give one state senator, Dewey Strobel, a shout out, but I'm also going to talk about some staffers. Mariah Krogstad in the Speaker's office, Nathan Schwantz in Devin Lemahue's office, and John Soper in Strobel's office put in an inordinate amount of work. They never get the credit they deserve. These are three top-end staffers that did the work. Lastly, on the literacy package, Dewey Strobel, Joel Kitchens, Bob Witke, and John Jagler. Man, you guys put together something that's going to change the direction of this state, and all of us are grateful for your efforts.
I like all of that. Now, on John Jagler, the guy's humping on education because he's singularly focused on that issue.
Yeah.
That's what I love about John.
We missed the joke. We got so wrapped up in it.
Yeah, Max has been very busy today. This week. So we'll get another Max joke next week. All right, gentlemen, you have a fantastic weekend. It's got some rain finally, so my garden will get watered without me having to haul water to the gardens. I'm very excited about that. Bill McCutcheon, Joseph Pecky, Political Power Hour, right here on WTMJ.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to WTMJ. I'm Steve, as Big Voice Guy just said. Brandon is regular producer's chair. Thanks to Bill McCutcheon and Joseph Pecky. I love that hour, and a lot of you do as well. It's one of our most popular hours on the radio here at WTMJ from our Avenue Studios in downtown Milwaukee. I'm going to spend a little time talking about some of the reaction to that conversation. And then we're going to be joined by, I think, Representative Amy Loudenbeck on the win for school choice charter in the proposed deal with the governor and the legislature. This big stuff. And I think, from someone who supports the idea of a non-public alternative or choices, literally in the name, for parents and students, I think this is a win-win. There's something for everybody in the shared revenue proposal as well here in Milwaukee County, City of Milwaukee, the state. So we'll get to some of that in a little bit. But I'm going to read a text, and I want to respond and give you some of the context of what I took away from the news of yesterday, which was Donald Trump, seven indictments in the documents case in Mar-a-Lago. This is from 262. Big story isn't about Trump. It's about the weaponization of DOJ and FBI by this government against conservatives. Also, the obvious difference in enforcement of laws based on your party. I understand that's the talking point. I understand this is what we're going to hear now for the next pick a number of months before the 2024 election. This story, if we allow it to, will consume us. So I understand people feel that way. I don't believe that, but I understand that you feel that way. Do politics enter into personal biases? Do they enter into legal issues? Of course. One hopes that's not the case. And as Bill said, and I'll say again, if there is evidence of Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, a link to hush money payments of any kind, illegal activity, even the documents issues that the president has faced, the vice president, former vice president, Mike Pence, then investigate him the same way that Donald Trump we investigated. Here's my problem with all of this, and I used this example during the hour with Bill and Joe. This reeks to me, this instant now party line talking points, which is the biggest problem with talk radio or TV, is this just blatant use of party talking points to propel an audience to do or feel one way. The brainwashing of America on both sides, because there's left-leaning media organizations, of course. It destroys critical thinking. You can love Donald Trump. You can vote for Donald Trump, and many people have and will. And I will argue till I'm dead gone from this earth, that that is your right to do. What you're not allowed to do is make stuff up, i.e., weaponization of government organizations. Because of Donald Trump, because of the election nonsense that many of us have had to live through for the last 3 years, we have destroyed the credibility of our federal government and many of its organizations and systems. I'm not a fan of crazy. We've lived these stories in Wisconsin, Posse Comitatus and, you know, these patriots and all this stuff. When in fact, those aren't real patriots. They're dressed up patriots, often wearing SWAT gear they ordered off the internet. But I'm going to allow you to agree with that idea if that's what you really think. But here's the problem. Like election conspiracy theories, at some point you have to win the argument, and you're not winning that argument. You're losing that argument. That's the problem. This smells to me just like election conspiracy, just like it, especially when before we even know the specifics, which we'll find out on Tuesday in a courtroom in Miami, we have elected officials in our state and elsewhere. Speaker of the House, for example, Kevin McCarthy. Representative, Congressman Derek Van Orden. Senator Ron Johnson already down that path before they even know. That's the problem. It'll be a robust debate. I can tell all of you, none of this, in my opinion, will be resolved at any point unless I'm wildly surprised by some story that we don't even know about yet before any of the real decisions have to be made. Donald Trump could be the nominee, maybe not. But none of this will be decided during that process. We'll take a break. After the break, Amy Loudenbeck will join us talking about a win, a big win in the proposed deal on the budget and on shared revenue in Wisconsin. One of the big stories yesterday on the proposed deal between the governor, Tony Evers, and the legislature, led by in the Senate, Devin Lemieux, and in the Assembly by Speaker Robin Voss, and I think good news for all those parents out there, especially parents who utilize the Choice program. More money, making it slightly more fair for parents that choose not necessarily to go to public schools and want to do it a different way. Joining us on the phone line, former state representative, now the director of policy for School Choice Wisconsin, Amy Loudenbeck joins us. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
So are you feeling like a lot of people that are involved with the choice schools across the state of Wisconsin feeling pretty good today?
This is a huge win for families all across the state to know that the resources are going to be there and the seats are going to be there for their kids. And we're really excited for them.
Are you surprised? Because I am a little bit. There's been a lot of pushback against choice, especially from Governor Tony Evers previously. Are you surprised that this seems like it's going to happen?
It's surreal. We have worked so hard to put forth every reason why all kids have value. Our schools need to have the resources that they need to compete with other public schools for talent and all the other things that all kids need, and really worked with our legislative partners. But the opening that was provided in the shared revenue package was an unbelievable opportunity to do something in divided government that we knew was a long shot. And I am surprised. I still can hardly believe it.
Given the funding that we're talking about, and it's pretty significant, it doesn't make it completely equitable yet. The public schools will still get more. And by the way, public schools are getting a big chunk of money as well. What in the short term how do you see that impacting choice, the choice schools?
Short term, schools can start budgeting and knowing that they can stop operating in the red and fundraising to make up the difference. They will continue to fundraise. And the exciting thing is seats are going to open up because schools are going to be able to expand and plan and add capacity. But the other exciting thing is as those fundraising dollars that they're going to continue to raise aren't needed to subsidize the per pupil payments on the voucher kids, that those dollars are going to be made available for needs-based scholarships, merit-based scholarships, additional financial assistance for families that don't qualify for the program because of the income limits still there. And that's going to be able to allow families that will be able to send their child to these great private schools as well, but just couldn't quite make it work within their family budget. So it's going to add capacity for students who are eligible for the program, but it's also going to allow schools to serve even more people with additional financial support from the school and the school's donors. So long-term, maybe 20,000 seats could be added, particularly at the high school level. There is not enough supply to meet the current demand. So letting schools sort of plan for the future, knowing that they can pencil in real numbers and have some certainty going forward, is going to just stabilize, I think, the whole program and add capacity going forward.
We're talking to former State Representative Amy Loudenbeck, who now is the Director of Policy at School Choice Wisconsin. Whenever I talk about this issue, and I'm a supporter of the choice schools and those alternatives to public education. My wife teaches in public education, or did, now retired, and I also support those schools. How do you respond as a policy director for School Choice Wisconsin to the folks who say, well, it's not a level playing field. You don't have to provide the same services we do in public schools. You don't have to do the things that we do that are mandated to do. Is that fair or not fair?
We have, again, when I talk about sharing all these informational tools for legislators and for the public, a lot of myths are still out there, but our schools are accountable. Our schools take the same tests as other kids. They report results on the DTI public report card that everyone can see, just like other public schools. We have to be accredited. Our teachers have, and others working in our schools, get background checks. We get audited. Multiple times a year, we have to go through and make sure our books balance and that we are financially healthy. So a lot of that isn't explaining why we should be treated differently. A lot of it is explaining that we really aren't, in most cases, treated all that much differently. We just give parents options to choose a school that shares their values, that meets their needs for all different reasons. It could be educational quality. It could be logistics. It could be safety. It could be all sorts of reasons. And if we could just focus on the kids, there are public, private, choice, charter, open enrollment options in Wisconsin. They're really popular. And for those in Milwaukee, a lot of people in the Milwaukee space would say MPS, choice, and charter are friends and neighbors in Milwaukee. If we can focus on the families that these schools serve and not the myth-busting kind of pushback and ideological differences, I think that we would all be in a better place. And hopefully the bill will set the table for that.
Bottom line for me, it's about education and making sure that parents and students have the best opportunity to succeed, which, let's be honest, even in, you know, someone who works and lives in the Milwaukee area, that is something we struggle with. So as a former representative, and this is a question I'm going to ask a lot of the people that are on today. I'm going to have Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson on the 11 o'clock hour. This is the deal that's made. What is the likelihood as a former state rep that this is the deal at the end of the process? Are you confident of that?
I am more than cautiously optimistic. I think that legislative leadership, Speaker Voss, Majority Leader LeMahieu, negotiated in good faith. If things go sideways, I trust that clear heads will prevail. They did during negotiations with the governor, and I appreciate his willingness to compromise on things. That's, I think, what the public hopes to see. And there was a lot at stake. There is a lot at stake for Milwaukee, for the Choice Program, and a lot of other shared revenue resources that are going to go out to the communities around. Every single community and local government in Wisconsin is going to benefit from the resources in the shared revenue package. And if all of these ideas can be supported in spite of maybe differences that others would prefer to see, it would be just a historic accomplishment. And I feel like it's going to happen. I feel like people are in a good spot, and it's an opportunity for people to, again, do what's right for Wisconsin.
Love the positivity. Thanks for taking the time. Amy Loudenbeck, former state rep, now director of policy at School Choice Wisconsin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We'll take a break here. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ on this Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Friday show as we get ready to launch to the weekend. Jeff Wagner will be back in his regular chair at noon today. I had some fun filling in the first half hour of the show yesterday before we got to Brewers baseball, which I went to the game. Incredible first inning for the Brewers, and then that was it. Eventually losing 6-3 to the Orioles. I did meet some Oriole fans at the game. I love them when other people, other fans travel to American Family Field. That's the cool thing. The great thing about having a roof on that sucker, even though we didn't need it yesterday, it was actually gorgeous at the game, is that it's there when we need it. So the people that travel from out of town, they can be rest assured that we're going to have a game. And had some fun meeting some potential partners for WTMJ, so they were awesome. They were handing out shirts, Wisconsin Clothing Company, to very excited tailgaters yesterday. So that was cool. A couple more thoughts before we get to the bottom of our news here. A lot of the conversation we're going to hear between now and, like, really when the primaries start next year, and there'll be some debates later this year as well, is and will be about Donald Trump. And I've said this for a long time. There's no surprises. I'm not a supporter of him. I'm glad that I didn't vote for him. I understand the popularity of friends, family, neighbors that love Donald Trump, which is perfectly fine. You have every right to do that and vote for the people you want. Not diminishing that in any respect. I don't like the way he approaches the job as a candidate. I don't like the way he approached the job as president. It's my take. And I think we have to understand that these are diversions from what really should be the direction of any campaign. What are you going to do? And I've had so many texters and emailers and callers saying, where's the policy stuff? And much of what Donald Trump is peddling now is reactive, retribution, punishment for anyone that challenges anything he says. Now, I'm not sure, and I don't even think some Trump supporters are sure, what kind of conservative he is. Is he a conservative? I would argue he never was one. Given his history, given his comments, public or otherwise, given his behavior. So that always comes into play for me. That's why I never supported him, because I don't think he's conservative. And to be honest, I think that if the Republican voters say no to him in the primaries, and look, there's a lot of heavy lifting that has to happen between now and then. And there may be more indictments for the president to face. There may be more information that we learn. Or he could sail through and win the nomination and, as I predicted, lose massively in November of 2024. Or slim chance, through some incredible chain of events, everything from Joe Biden can't perform the duties of the job to somebody beats Joe Biden and gets some momentum and unseats the current incumbent president for the nomination for Democrats. Sure, in that weird scenario, that weird reality, Trump could win. But as a wise Republican friend of mine said, whatever your thoughts about Donald Trump, love him, hate him, don't pay attention to him. All the things that swirl around the circus that is Donald Trump, take away from everything else. And the person said to me, I'm not sure we could survive another 4 years of that. And that is a very coherent statement. I'm not sure we could, because anytime the subject of the former president comes up, everybody loses their minds. I try not to do that, but I will certainly give you my thoughts on the former president. But I still want to be fair about it. And that's going to be the difficulty going forward. So I guess my advice is ease up on the conspiracy theories. I know we saw a lot of elected officials jump headfirst into weaponization and in the party talking points. That's lazy. Intellectually lazy and politically lazy. Don't do that.
The grass is cut. The hot dogs are hot, and the beer is ice cold.
Right indeed. Oh, baby, get up!
It's time for virtual baseball on the Steve Scafidi Show, brought to you by Siding Unlimited.
All right, here we go. Thanks to Siding Unlimited for letting us do this every Friday at 10:35. Let's meet our players, Ryan and Todd. Hi, Ryan. Hi, Todd.
Hello.
Good morning.
All right, gentlemen. Let's go to the ground rules. We're all meeting, assembling at home plate like happens at every baseball game. Producer Brandon will run through the ground rules for virtual baseball on this Friday edition.
All right. We got two players. You heard from him right there. Today we have Ryan from Oconomowoc as our home team and Todd from Milwaukee as our visiting team. Each of them will get a separate set of 10 highlights. Each set will include an equal number of hits and an equal number of outs. They are numbered 1 through 10. You get 5 selections. After those 5 selections, we only record the hit in the highlight, not the run scored in the highlight. Key rule in there. Pay attention to that. After those 5 swings, the number of runs tallied becomes your final score if there is a tie. In this case, Ryan is the home team. He will try to walk it off. First caller is always selected as the home team today. Ryan, you were the first caller, and you will be the home team.
All right, Ryan and Todd.
Fantastic.
You heard the rules. The goal is to score the most runs. Todd, because you're the away team, you're first up. What is your first selection out of the 10 highlights?
Number 4, please.
Number 4, we have Brian Anderson.
Here's the 0-1 to Anderson. Breaking ball, and this is a little blooper into right field. It's going to drop in front of the right fielder, Melendez. Everybody moves up 90 feet.
There you go.
All right. All-important base runner. So that could mean a run. Todd, what's second choice?
Number 2.
Number 2, we have Rowdy Tellez.
The right field line, high and deep. If it's fair, it's gone. It is gone.
Oh!
There you go.
Yes. Todd knocks it out of the park. Rowdy Tellez with the assist. 2 runs in. You played it 2. Goal is the most runs. What's your third selection?
Number 1, please.
Number 1, we have Christian Yelich.
Here's a 2-0 pitch. It's ripped down the right field line. Into the corner, a fair ball. It's going to bounce all the way to the fence. Rounding third base is Peterson. He'll score. Yelich to third. He's turning it. He's headed for third base. The relay throw, not in time. No. It's an RBI.
All right,
triple.
Stretches it to a triple. All-important base runner in scoring position. 2 more at-bats, 2 in. What's your fourth pick?
Number 3, please.
Number 3, again, we have Christian Yelich. We'll see if he can bat himself in.
2-1. Yelich sends it in the air. This one is going to be playable, too. Rosario in foul territory has it, and the inning is over.
All right, so that didn't help you out. Runner stays on third. You need to at least get a hit here to advance that final run in your fifth and final at-bat. What's your fifth pick?
I'm going to go with number 8, please.
Number 8, we have Owen Miller.
2-1 pitch. Miller. Fly ball. Shallow right. Long run for Renfro. Still running. He's going to get there in time.
All right, Todd, that means you scored 2 runs. So hang on the line. Let's see what Ryan's got in that hot bat. Ryan, same rules, same number of at-bats, which is 5, 10 highlights. What's your first choice?
Let's go with number 1.
Number 1, we have Mr. Willy Adames.
Set at the belt, the 0-1. Willy hits it high in the air into right. Playable for Jose Azokar, who backtracks a few steps. And
not a good start there.
All right, Ryan, slow start on the home side. Let's see what number 2 brings you.
Let's go with number 2.
All right.
Number 2, we have Brian Anderson.
And the pitch. Swing on a base hit to center. Singleton flat around third. He'll score.
There we go. All-important base runner.
Now we got some movement here.
All right, Ryan, you got a runner on, which is good, on first. Got to move around the bases there to get some runs in. You got to get 2 to tie Todd, 3 to beat him, to walk him off. What's your third pick?
Let's go with number 3.
Number 3, Christian Yelich.
Yelich lines one to the right field corner. That's going to get in there. At least a double. To third, they're going to try to score. Mitchell, the throw, he's in there. To third goes Yelich. Garrett Mitchell.
That sounds familiar. Did you use that same one on the other side? No, no. Yeah, 2 triples. All right. So 1 run in, runner on third, so you can try to time here with 2 final at-bats. There are outs left, so what's your fourth pick there, Ryan?
All right, let's go with number 4.
Number 4, Joey Weimer.
Shallow right, and it's going to get down.
Anderson's coming around to score. It's 4-0 Brewers on another RBI knock for Joey Weimer.
The red-hot Joey Weimer.
Joey Weimer with that fresh haircut as well. All right, so gentlemen, 2-2, Ryan, you have a fifth and final at-bat left. Runner on first. You need a...
And keep in mind, two home runs on the board yet.
Yes, so you need a home run to walk them off, or we may go to extra innings.
No pressure, Ryan.
All on you, Ryan. What's your fifth and final selection in the regular
innings? Man, I just don't know. I guess I'll go with number five.
Number five, Abraham Toro.
Line down the right field line. This is up, and it is gone!
Walking it up.
There we go. Ryan walks him off 4-2. Right Toro for the win. Todd, thanks for playing virtual baseball sponsored by Signing Unlimited.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, you're welcome. Ryan, you are the winner. 4-2, walk-off home run. How do you feel right now?
You know, I'm just really proud of the guy.
He's going cliche.
You know, the game's not over till it's over.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you know, they really put everything out there today. I'm just really proud of our guys.
All right, I think that's three or four sports cliches. So he's a veteran.
He's got it. He's been in a press conference.
Ryan
before.
Working for a tryout option with the Milwaukee Brewers broadcast team. All right, Ryan, stay on the line. You'll win a WTMJ prize package and a chance for a $500 gift card to be entered in the June drawing. And there's only four Fridays in June? Five Fridays at the most? So you got a good chance. 1 in 5, 1 in 4, whatever it is, good luck to you. That has been Virtual Baseball. Take us to break, Brandon.
Swinging a drive to center. I'll tell you, this baby's moving along. Wow. Don't jinx it.
This is, no, what are we touching? I don't have my pin uncovered. So, the middle of the ninth. Man, wow.
Welcome back, Friday edition on... But hope to be a great weekend here in Wisconsin. Hope it's great where you are as well. Thanks for finding us over the air, online, podcast, stream, all that stuff, audio and video. Cats and dogs living together, all good, all the time. Also on WTMJ.com. I guess I don't know how I feel about this. I'm going to tell you the story, and I'll read a little bit from a piece that I read last night. And it has to do with security and cameras. Full disclosure, I'm a big fan of security cameras, public-facing cameras as well, capturing things that happen. As many of those things, those devices are around, people still are oblivious to them, and they do things in public they shouldn't do. And oftentimes, because there's no one around, they're captured by video, and much of that video is used to go after folks who are, in some cases, performing criminal acts. So I saw this story, and the headline is Drive for Uber, D.C., District of Columbia, wants to give you a free dash cam. So the story is this. They're trying in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., to put more cameras on the streets. The argument is it'll help police investigate crimes. So leaders in D.C. are going to give free dash cameras to some individuals who spend a lot of time behind the wheel of their car, focusing on Uber drivers, DoorDash. And, you know, full disclosure, I believe this program was funded by a donation from DoorDash and other city agencies trying to, you know, clean up their acts, reducing crime in any way they can. Yeah, $500,000 donation from the food delivery service DoorDash. So there's some self-interest at play here as well. They're going to hand these cameras out later this summer at designated locations, rideshare companies, food delivery people. The comment from DoorDash, advancing the safety of our entire community is incredibly important to everyone at DoorDash. We look forward to taking this bold step with Mayor Bowser. I believe her first name is Muriel. And the Metropolitan Police Department as we work together toward achieving a safer future for everyone in the district. Now, they've already had programs where homeowners can install cameras on their property. Obviously, one of the most famous companies, Ring, where they get rebates up to $200 per camera, maximum rebate of $500 per residential address. This is the dazzling detail that stunned me when I read it. Since this program started, they've installed more than 26,000 private security cameras on homes and businesses. Think about that for a second. 26,000. And law enforcement, because that's a logical question, what does law enforcement think about this? They've said this evidence is crucial in crime solving and closing cases. So that's the law enforcement piece. What I'm curious about and what I want to hear from you about is, what about the privacy piece? And I've said this over and over again. If it's a conscious decision by an individual to put a camera in a car or on their front door, back door, whatever, in their yard, I have zero problem with it. If it's a conscious decision to cooperate with police, zero problem with it. It gets tricky, though, when police demand to have access to cameras. Then there's a more legal, sticky situation. And the privacy concerns all of us have, really, of invasion of privacy. Are you ever off camera anymore? Or in the case of devices in our home, Alexa and otherwise, Echo devices, all that. Who's listening? How do we know if they're listening? That's our conversation, 855-616-1620. Your thoughts. A program designed to cut crime in a city that needs help. Cameras installed in vehicles that drive a lot through the cities of Washington, D.C., through the streets of Washington, D.C. What do you think? We'll discuss after this. I thought they'd be more concerned about the arrival of cameras. You know what it probably is? I think people just accept it now. I have Ring devices. I have devices in my home that do everything from give me the weather to show me pictures of my security devices, what's going on outside, to give me breaking news that allow me to link to other sites, including WTMJ. They do all these things. I think it's become acceptable, become normalized. And knowing a lot of members of law enforcement, public safety, there's this weird thing that's happening. So a lot of people say they respect first responders. I spent a whole month doing it in my salute to service, thanks to great supporters like Educators Credit Union and the Packing House Restaurant in Cudahy. I always say Cudahy. It's in Milwaukee, close to Cudahy. So I hear that, but then I see the reaction from people when they're asked to maybe do something they're a little uncomfortable with, which is adding some more security around their homes or adding some more security around their businesses. Because the question is always about cost. And in this case, and I'm talking about the District of Columbia, there really is no cost. If you're a homeowner or business owner, they provide the cameras free of charge with a rebate option. $200 per camera, $500 per household, which is basically two cameras, maybe one extra device. And as I said before, the number is significant, 26,000 added since this program began. And law enforcement is pretty consistent on saying, we like this. But I also know that as part of, and this is a part of a bigger story that we kind of alluded to earlier in our politics conversation, there's a growing sense that some Americans, some of us, don't appreciate that intrusion, don't appreciate the big brother aspects, which refer to the government's ability to know everything about you, to see all that you do, to essentially dictate what your life is like. And that flies right in the face of the freedoms that many of us are used to. The quick answer on this is happening. Much like most of the movies that you see that have any sort of a criminal element or a law enforcement element in the future, supervision slash surveillance slash all-seeing, all-knowing, it's hard to imagine a world where that's not going to be the case. Because like everything, technology takes over. We can't even figure out how to keep kids safe from the technology that's rapidly advancing as we speak. We know it's dangerous. We know it's talked about a lot. What's anybody doing about it? Well, there's efforts like state of Montana to ban technology in some cases, like TikTok. platforms that they feel and others feel create great stresses among young people. And I agree with this, by the way. And I can make the connection between the arrival of this technology and the incredible disruption in lives and education and crime. Not the positives of crime, but the ability to spread information that allows people to commit crimes, to participate in group events, all relating about illegal activities, like some protests slash riots. And that question is going to be one that's front and center for, I think, the rest of our lives. How do we sort it out? Well, D.C., they're doing something about it. $500,000 grant from DoorDash, installing cameras in those vehicles, also Uber drivers and homeowners and businesses. Future's coming. How we reconcile all this and how we react to it is the question. I'm not confident we're going to figure it out. Quickly, Jeff from Cuddy, I don't believe privacy should be an issue. People who have smartphones have already given up their privacy. Well said, Jeff from Cuddy. All right, we'll take a break. We are scheduled to be joined by the mayor of Milwaukee, Cavalier Johnson, shortly after the break for news right here on WTMJ.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And let's get right to it. Joining us on the phone line, we're going to talk a lot in the next few days, next week, probably more specifically, about this bipartisan deal reached between Governor Tony Evers, Republican lawmakers benefiting local communities. One of those local communities is the city of Milwaukee, and its mayor, Cavalier Johnson, joins us on the phone. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Mayor Scafidi. How are you doing?
I am wonderful on this day. So let's talk about, let's go big picture here. This is a big day for Milwaukee, isn't it?
It's a monumentous day for the city of Milwaukee, really for local governments all across the state of Wisconsin, yes.
All right, so let's talk about some of the specifics here. You will benefit from an ability with a two-thirds votes from your common council to raise the sales tax. I'm going to ask you the tough question first, and then I understand the benefits. Do you have the votes?
Look, anytime that there's been a question about the city's ability to continue on, to remain solvent, to not get trapped into a financial death spiral, the common council has stepped up and answered that question and taken that vote. And I believe the common council will do the same thing here because there's so many things that are at play here. Council members and their constituents, I think, most importantly, will want to make sure that we preserve and increase police service in Milwaukee. They'll want to make sure that we preserve and increase fire service in Milwaukee. They'll want to make sure that we are able to continue on supporting our Milwaukee Public Library. They'll want to make sure that we don't end up in litigation and have a insolvency, and then our pensioners who have worked for 10, 20, 25, 30 years in the city end up getting a haircut on their pensions. You know, for all these things, I think that the common council will step up, do the right thing, and vote to enable us to implement this tool that Milwaukee had been sort of on an island on in terms of being the largest city in the country that doesn't have the ability to levy a local sales tax for operations.
Who do you credit for making this happen?
So many people. I mean, it was a team effort, a true team effort on all sides. City government, county government, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, the Wisconsin Towns Association, the Counties Association. Legislators, both in the Assembly and the Senate, Republican and Democrat, who led the effort, the governor, instrumental here as well. So many folks to name, but it really was a team effort that lifted us up and got us to this point that we will have historic investments in local governments across the state of Wisconsin and allowing the flagship city, the only first-class major metropolitan city in the state, and that's Milwaukee, to continue to provide services that our constituents deserve, that our visitors deserve, that our daily commuters in the Wow counties deserve, and that our business community, and we've got some of the most iconic businesses in the state of Wisconsin, they deserve these services as well.
Mayor Cavalier Johnson, City of Milwaukee, joining us on WTMJ. Have you heard from constituencies like MPS, Milwaukee Public Schools, organizations associated with education, about the qualifier, at least as far as it stands today, to have SROs return to public schools in Milwaukee? Have you heard anything from those folks?
Yeah, I have. And the message that I sent to them is that, look, in a bill like this that's sweeping and bipartisan, nobody gets everything that they want. I certainly didn't get everything that I want. In fact, I had a strong aversion to the local policy provisions that were in the bill. I've been quite public about my aversion to those things, including the SRO requirement. I think we were already on a pathway to doing that anyway and didn't need the state to mandate that to happen. That being said, yes, to answer your question, I have had conversations with folks who are concerned about that. And the fact of the matter is that initially the Republican stance was that there should be an SRO, a school resource officer, in every single school within the Milwaukee Public Schools District. That's 156 SROs. We've worked with them in good faith negotiation, collaboration, and got that number down to 25. 25 that the district, the school district, and Milwaukee Police Department will be able to decide where they go. So we don't have, you know, an issue where we have police officers in elementary schools where that's totally unnecessary, but instead could divert those officers to places where, you know, reckless driving or out of control fights or things like that may be more likely to pop off.
Is it your understanding that the ability to raise that sales tax is in perpetuity, or is this a one-timer? My understanding is, under the current language, you can do it with a two-thirds vote ongoing. Is that not the case?
Yes, this would allow us to implement the sales tax, and there is a sunset, I believe, of 30 years.
Got it. Generally, whenever you have discussions like this, there's winners and losers. You talked about some of the things you didn't like. You certainly talked about the things that are going to benefit Milwaukee. One of the big questions is, will this solve the financial issues for this community, Milwaukee in this case? When it comes to the pension, is this going to be the deal that does it, or are we going to continue to be hearing about this going forward?
Well, what the deal does here is provide significant resources to assist with the unfunded liability part of the City of Milwaukee's pension obligation. And so we will be able to continue paying the amount of money that we presently pay into the pension, but then use the additional revenues that we receive from the sales tax to be able to cover the unfunded part of that. We won't continue to add to the pension here because we will soft close the City of Milwaukee's pension program. And just by way of background for your listeners, the City of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County are the only two local units of government in the state of Wisconsin that have their own pension system. And so, you know, our desire was to soft close our system. So the folks who are presently in our system, presently accruing benefits there, they will remain in the system and will continue to do that. And then new hirees, after the bill goes into effect, would then go into the Wisconsin retirement system, the same as every municipal employee in the state of Wisconsin.
Mayor,
so this puts us in a position where we're able to take care of our pension obligation.
Mayor Chevy Johnson, I think it's a win for the city. I think it's a win for the county. I think it's a win for the state. I'm encouraged, and I just want to get your final comment. I'm encouraged in a divided government state like Wisconsin is that we've seen some real leadership from both sides. Their elected leaders, their leaders in the Senate and the Assembly and in the governor's office, and the local leaders also chiming in, and the business community as well. This is a rare example, I think, of when it can work in a divided government. Do you agree?
No, I totally agree, and I'm glad that you mentioned the support from the business community. MMAC has been integral in this. The Greater Milwaukee Committee has been integral in our efforts here, too. And look, I said when I was running for mayor that I was going to set up a cot in the Capitol, and we were going to get things done. And I'm very proud that after nearly 30 years of infighting on this issue, we're actually able to move the ball forward and get something done historic for the City of Milwaukee, historic for the entire state of Wisconsin's local units of government that provide the services to citizens all across the state.
And as I said before, I think this is a win, and I appreciate you taking it. I know you got a busy schedule today. You're doing a lot of media and also talking to your constituents. Thanks for taking the time, Mayor Cavalier Johnson, City of Milwaukee.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. And I want people to understand there's been a reach out to all of the sort of the leaders on this issue, Speaker Robin Voss, Senator Devin Lemahieu. I think Governor Tony Evers will be on the show on Monday. We're working on the details on that early in the week, if it's not Monday. And I want to hear what they all have to say about this. I guess my one point that I said a couple times, this is a win here. This idea that's persisted for too long among some electeds, supporters of the hyper-partisan world of Wisconsin politics, that Milwaukee should be shunned or ignored or punished, I think is dangerous. It's still the driver of the state when it comes to the economy. More people live here than any other city in Wisconsin. And it's the, I would argue, the cultural center of the state as well. Sports, you can keep going. And to find a mutual agreement between some people that have vastly different ideas about where the state should go, the direction of policy, freedoms, pretty significant stuff. So I will congratulate all parties as I try to list those with the mayor. This is a big day. Now, I would keep my eye on two groups, Milwaukee's Common Council and the County Board. Will they have the votes? That was the first question I asked them. Will they have the votes? I've heard from some people they don't have the votes right now. That is going to be a story to watch as we go forward. But as of right now, bipartisan deal reached, not just benefiting Milwaukee, benefiting the whole state, public schools, choice schools. That's why I called it a win. Quick break. Boy, we got a lot of moving pieces today, kind of shuffling things around a bit. So typically, if Steve ruled the world, would be in the 1108 segments. A little behind the scenes looking at what we do here. So we're going to slide that to the bottom of the hour after the news update from Connie Weber. And typically, we at this moment would be just picking another topic to talk about. We're gonna slide in. A lot of moving pieces, as I said. Shifting. I'm driving my producer nuts today. And he's ready. Are you ready for the weekend? Big head nod. Yes, he is. With that freshly gelled, nice haircut he's got. He walked in today looking like a supermodel, this guy did. Brandon Snide, big time sports guy, occasional producer of my program. All right. As I said, we do this every Friday. The magic bus leaves the station. An agreement reached on shared revenue. We just talked with Mayor Cavalier Johnson about that. Former President Trump will appear in court and more. It's the Weekend Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go
back in the day.
The Milwaukee Pride Parade kicking off this afternoon in Walker's Point on 2nd Street and Greenfield Avenue.
We're out here, we're having drinks, we're singing, we're watching the parade, we're dancing in the streets. Today's a day to remember that no matter what, we're still here. Now I got
my magic bus. It'll be called Connect One. A 9-mile east-to-west bus rapid transit line.
Cool. Straight path to the venue that we're going to.
The free battery electric bus will run on Wisconsin Avenue, connecting the Regional Medical Complex in Wauwatosa to the Milwaukee Lakefront.
11 electric buses, elevated bus stations, and new technology.
The BRT is a BFD.
The Milwaukee County Transit System expects an average of more than 9,500 weekly riders by 2035.
I will use this line to connect to other lines. I'll just be using this all the time.
In the same way that Mac introduced us to personal computing, Apple Vision Pro will introduce us to spatial computing.
Live from Spaceship Debbie, you are about to enter the VR universe. Have you ever done this before?
No.
Are you excited?
I am very excited. This is going to be awesome.
This is pretty funky. I'm about to go down a massive hill. Oh my God. Yeah, baby.
It's my absolute honor to introduce Adrian Griffin as a head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks.
I don't take this lightly. I'm excited to get to work, and we're going to have a lot of fun this year.
I'm curious to know what you were experiencing going through the whole process.
Well, again, I think it's credit to John and his staff. I thought they created, like, the perfect platform for me.
Is there added pressure knowing that Giannis is a great guy, but if he says no, if you don't connect with him, that this probably doesn't happen?
After I sat down with Giannis, I felt like, man, this is a great connection, and we wanted the same thing.
Pope Francis out of surgery after a three-hour-long operation on his abdomen.
He's fine, and he's awake.
New York City's skyline looking a lot like Mars, as that massive, ominous plume of wildfire smoke pours over the border. Millions of Americans are feeling its effects.
This is the highest level index of our knowledge since the 60s.
It smelled like a tire was like a burning tire.
My heart's in the East Coast because my daughter Amy lives in New York City and she is with us this afternoon.
No one's hanging outside and it's otherwise such a beautiful day, and this time of year, usually people are, so that's definitely strange.
A showdown over shared revenue Wednesday.
If we do not get a deal this week, I think we should strip out all of the Milwaukee things.
Splintering different topics off feels a little bit concerning to me.
We do have breaking news. GOP leaders and Governor Evers reaching a deal on shared revenue that would drop a requirement that Milwaukee County and the city go to referendum to approve new sales taxes.
We will have transformational school choice expansions. We will have money for public schools. We will have more money for all of the local government services that we know are priorities.
This has been a historic investment in our schools, public and private.
These funds must be used to address their unfunded pension liability and to maintain and grow their law enforcement, fire protection, and their emergency services.
The dire state that the county and the city are in right now is in large part because of police debt. The answer to that is not more police.
President of Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, Tim Sheehy, says he doesn't take county board and common council votes for granted. However,
the answer to a vote no on this is drastic 25% cuts in city and county services, and I think nobody wants to sign up for that vote.
Pat Robertson founded the Christian Broadcasting Network in 1960 and was appearing on its flagship program, The 700 Club, till nearly the end of his life.
I think you can say, well, Putin's out of his mind. Yes, maybe so. But at the same time, he's being compelled by God.
Bye, Felicia.
A federal grand jury has indicted former President Trump in the ongoing investigation into the possible mishandling of classified documents. It is the first time a sitting or former president has ever faced those federal charges.
Once the former president arrives here at the federal courthouse in downtown Miami on Tuesday, it will mark an extraordinary moment for the United States because Trump will be placed under arrest by the very government he was once elected to lead.
What are we, gay?
What? A week.
Yeah, baby!
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
Man, that was a busy one. Did you recognize all those stories? I did, because I heard all of them live, either on my show or all the other great shows, thanks to the great work of our producers and our show hosts, and thanks to Outdoor Living Unlimited for making that possible. We'll take a break here. We'll get to the bottom. News coming up. And then, if Steve ruled the world, a special, even though it's early, patriotic 4th of July, parades, fireworks edition of Steve Ruled the World coming up at 11:35. Quick break. Anna and Jesse, anything but sports, looking forward to that. Carol Kane will be alongside as well. So, I have a couple minutes before we get to the bottom of the hour news here, and then we're going to have a later edition of Steve Ruled the World, and it's kind of sort of a patriotic fireworks parade. There's both some parade news, of course, this week, Menomonee Falls, saying, you know what? I applauded them, even though Falls does some crazy stuff out there in that little village. Not so little anymore. There has to be some rules associated with that. So I was sorting through my... I always have a topic, and then I kind of do some bullet points, and these didn't make the cut. So I'm going to give them to you now, since I have a minute or so, and these didn't make the final cut. But if you have a flag, I would say all summer, but certainly around the holidays related to the flag, Memorial Day and 4th of July, of course, Independence Day. This probably, 4th of July should be the one day when you absolutely should fly the flag, regardless of your politics. Simple gesture. It could be that little small flag you get when they hand them out at parades. Just stick in your planter in the front yard. Maybe buy one less pack of Busch Light beer and buy a flag. And just for that one day, if you're so passionate about politics, take down if you have the flag up, take down the Let's Go Brandon nonsense and the F Joe Biden stuff that you wrote on a piece of plywood in your front yard. That didn't make the cut, but I wanted to say it anyway. And one more before the news. If you're that guy who camps out on the lakefront every year for the 3rd of July fireworks festivities, and you say stuff that, like, I'm protecting my property. I'm here every year. I watch the fireworks, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not your property, right? You treat it like it is, but it's not. And that doesn't sound very neighborly to me. And as I said, I give kudos to folks like Menominee Falls, Sheboygan, Tosa, who are saying enough is enough with this camping out or staking a property. It's a parade. It's fireworks. It's not a homeless camp in San Francisco. They didn't make the cut. Wait till you hear the ones that did. Right to it today. I love it. Still messing around. Let's get the easy one out of the way first. 4th of July, Independence Day. Let's not make a controversy about what the day is called. Let's just celebrate the fact that you live in the greatest country on the planet, have lots of freedoms afforded to you by the bravery and heroism of the original colonists, yes, I said it, and members of our armed forces, and stop complaining about everything. It's also not celebrated on the 3rd of July or any other day that's convenient to your community leaders. This isn't a baseball travel team's summer schedule or a cleaning appointment at your local dentist. Celebrate on the 4th, you non-traditionalists.
Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
Are we clear?
If Steve
ruled the world.
All right, fireworks, a huge part of the 4th of July celebration. We all know this, right? Here's a good rule of thumb on how much you should spend on fireworks, though. If you spend more on fireworks than you do on groceries, car insurance, rent, mortgage, you should probably dial back your fireworks enthusiasm a little bit. If you spend more money buying fireworks than you do on political campaigns, you should be good. And by the way, the correct answer for how much you should spend on a political campaign is zero. They have not earned that donation. And here's the rub. Nearly every community has a free fireworks show. Wait until it gets dark. Drive towards the fireworks. Park that F-150. Shake the dirt off that old blanket you keep in the back. Layer on some bug spray. Sit back and enjoy.
You just gotta ignite the light and let it shine just on the night like the 4th of July. Cause baby, you're a firework. Come on, show them what you work. Make them go as you shoot up.
Something, isn't she? Easy on the eyes, too. Public service announcement, fireworks and alcohol are a bad mix. Repeat that. Fireworks, alcohol, bad mix. I know it seems fun to try and outdo your local community's official fireworks celebration, but that usually just ticks off your neighbors, scares dogs, and can, in some circumstances, cost you a digit or two. Ask Jason Pierre-Paul about that. Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about. More than 10,000 fireworks-related injuries every year.
15-year-old Michael Sexton back at the parking lot where a firework exploded in his face and hands on January 3rd. It started as a street racing meetup. Michael said he didn't know the majority of people there. A friend had invited him because he has an interest in cars. Then it turned disastrous.
Since New Year's was around the corner, as it just passed, everyone had fireworks, everyone was throwing them. And someone asked me for a lighter. Simple as that. Changed my life forever.
If Steve ruled the world.
Was it simple, though? Should you put some thought into that, maybe? Don't be that guy. All right, you probably don't know this, but we stole the idea of fireworks from China, which used them to celebrate the Chinese New Year, dating all the way back to the 7th century. Which is ironic, because a lot of our fireworks now come from China, the largest exporter of fireworks in the world. You know, with all this China trade and trade secrets war things going on, it might just be too expensive for some folks to even host their own fireworks shows going forward. Inflation is real, folks, which would certainly make a lot of dogs happy. And you know what? You know what they say? Happy dog, happy life. Not sure anybody says that or that makes any sense, but that's what some people tell me. Of course, some people say Donald Trump is the best thing that ever happened to this country, and that thought is crazier than smoking a cigarette in a fireworks factory.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting. Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning?
If Steve ruled the world,
not made up, your leading candidate for the Republican nomination for president in 2024. All right. I know the day celebrates our independence from Great Britain in 1776, but let's also take the opportunity to thank those folks who work on the 4th when the rest of us are off watching parades and going to picnics. Members of the military, public safety professionals, the folks who work in hospitals, nursing homes, send them a note, thank them, think about their sacrifice while you're enjoying your damn day off.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
If Steve ruled the world.
Cannot argue with Mr. Jack Nicholson. All right, if you're at a parade that allows the people of the parade to throw candy, and if your community doesn't, they also need to lighten up, Francis. Remember that candy is for kids. I don't want to see an out-of-shape, middle-aged Karen chasing down a Tootsie Roll to the horrors of the kids and other moms and dads watching the parade. Not for you! And what's with the yoga pants? Stop trying to cram 50 pounds of potatoes in a 10-pound bag, people.
It's got to be something that she wears. Yoga pants. She wears them all day. Yoga pants. At work and at play. Yoga pants. What's all the fuss? What makes them so special that they keep them from us? Yoga pants.
If Steve ruled the world.
Oh, thank you, Tim Hawkins. That one made me laugh. Did you know that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson both died on the 4th of July? I didn't know that till a few years ago. You also know that Tom Cruise was born on the 3rd of July and made a movie about or called Born on the 4th of July. That was a lie, and that's why I can't trust Tom Cruise anymore. But he's really, really good at Mission Impossible.
None of our lives can matter more than this mission.
I don't accept that.
If Steve ruled the world.
I love those movies. All right. Last but not least, you know what's great about American and the 4th of July Independence Day celebrations? For at least one day, most of us get together, celebrate what's great about this country. We don't apologize for being patriotic. It's a good thing.
We've got serious problems, and we need serious people. And if you want to talk about character, Bob, you better come at me with more than a burning flag and a membership card. If you want to talk about character and American values, fine. Just tell me where and when, and I'll show up. This is a time for serious people, Bob, and your 15 minutes are up. My name is Andrew Shepherd, and I am the president.
That is this week's
If Steve Ruled the World.
My wife will be very happy I played that clip. She loves that movie. Take us to break, Brandon.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains to the prairie, to the ocean,
texter says, what's with the 4th of July stuff? Well, it was more than that, texter from the Fond du Lac area. I want you to start thinking about this stuff. I am encouraged by the behavior of Menominee Falls to ban the knuckleheads from camping out for 24 hours in advance of a parade. It's a parade. It's Tootsie Rolls. Not for you, for the kids. Stop caroning up everything, making everything crazy. And all those dads who have to go put out those lawn chairs, they don't want to do that. They want to sit home and in their comfortable chair and watch whatever they watch and drink their, well, whatever they drink. So enough. I'm getting you thinking about the decisions you make. If I wait till the 4th of July, it's too late. Is that too strong? Did I come off too strong on that? I don't think so. It's silly to reserve a spot in a parade a day ahead of time. It's borderline, I got to be very careful because there's a lot of fireworks lovers, to make public property your property and get mad when other people are around you in a public park because you're excited about a fireworks show. That's weird behavior. It's not your property. You don't have a right to the same corner on the same parade route for 50 years in a row. I don't care if you've been there for 49 years. I'm going to bust it up and you're going to sit somewhere else. That's the rules. Because the segment is called If Steve Ruled the World. That's the magic of it. Jim gives me a thumbs up. So we're on the same page, Jim. I love that. Not surprisingly, the yoga pants got a lot of love. That was Tim Hawkins. You can find it on YouTube. Yoga pants song is how I found it. Everything, this is my Google lesson. Everything is searchable. There's no reason now to walk around and not know the answer to something. So when people ask me questions, other than the Ask Steve Anything segment every Wednesday at 11:08, I will refer them to all the search platforms that are out there. Did you Google it? Did you Google that? You know what? There's the answer. Now, disclaimer, everything you read, should I have to say this? Everything you read on the internet is not necessarily true. Also, getting back to the news part of this day, our interview with the mayor of Milwaukee, Cavalier Chevy Johnson, great interview. Great day for the city of Milwaukee, and we'll find out what the county's going to do. Two-thirds votes, common council, county board. Is it going to happen? Oof. He's a lot more optimistic than I am. You can find it at our podcast page on WTMJ.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, and all the other varieties of such. A quick hitter here before we get to the break and then find out what Jeff Wagner's going to talk about. Sometimes actions and the world we live in has, I don't want to say unintended consequences, but unintended results. And remember we had all those masks during the pandemic? The government, you could get them from the government. People were buying them up in droves, selling out stores, and companies were in triple overtime production, producing them. Well, the interesting thing from the East Coast of the United States, New York City and other big cities that are experiencing the air quality issues, some of the worst air qualities in the world, by the way, is that they have a use for those masks. The world has truly come full circle. We had masks. We used them for the pandemic. People were ridiculed. They took them off. Even though for some people it was a good idea to wear them, people still deny the COVID pandemic. Set it aside. They're not going to deny air quality in New York City, and now they have masks to wear. So there you go, the law of unintended consequences. I don't know if that fits or not. Just one thing, one way. That's something that we did a few years ago, benefits the people today. You think the people in New York City aren't happy they have those masks? I think they're extremely delighted. And they are using the masks when somebody said, we'll never use those again. And here we are. Just a few years later. We'll take a break. See what Wagner's going to talk about after this on WTMJ. Fun show today on this Friday. I'm going to get off to my weekend plans. Going to see a play. Tootsie at the PAC tonight. That'll be interesting. And then dinner out on Saturday. Hope you have great plans. We'll be back Monday with Carol Kane. As I said earlier, we had Mayor Cavalier Johnson on talking about the deal reached between the governor, Tony Evers, the legislature led by Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu and Speaker Robin Voss. And I think a lot of local leaders are very happy because they're going to finally get some help on their tough budgets. And we'll continue those conversations. Governor Tony Evers working on getting him on Monday's show, and as well as Speaker Robin Voss and Majority Leader. So we'll try to get all those voices that were involved in this. And there's, as I said earlier in the show, there's a lot more people involved, a lot of people behind the scenes, a lot of staffers worked long and hard to make this happen. I think this is a good deal. Everybody got something, and as I told you in the 10 o'clock hour, a big win, of course, for choice schools in the state of Wisconsin, and that is something they've been asking for a long time, and we had former Representative Amy Loudenbeck join us, who now works for School Choice Wisconsin. Big day for them as well. So we shall see. The stumbling point, though, will be these two-third votes, and I've already heard rumblings that some people are not as enthusiastic as maybe the electeds are. We shall see how that all shapes out. Jeff Wagner is back after a fun day off yesterday.
I did. So you're going to the theater tonight?
Yes.
We went to the theater yesterday. It was we took the train down to Chicago and saw West Side Story, the Lyric Opera. It was outstanding. Then took the train back. I'm not anti-mass transit. I'm just anti-mass transit. It doesn't make any sense. But that Hiawatha train, great way to go to Chicago.
Yeah, one of the easiest ways to get down there. I'm against transit that no one uses.
Right. Well, it's, right. They cost millions and millions of dollars. But, for example, the Amtrak train coming back, so we hopped on like the 509 train that comes back. It was full. I mean, it was absolutely full.
That makes it so easy.
Oh, it is. And, you know, it gets home at 6:45. So we just had an absolutely great day. And I always forget how much I like live theater. You know?
You're a bigger fan than I am.
Are you? Well, yeah. You'll see. I forget that. And there's so many opportunities. And here in Milwaukee, of course, you're going to see Tootsie tonight.
Yeah, my wife loves it. So I'm going with her. And that's always a treat.
What a good guy.
Yes,
what a good guy. Well, enjoy your weekend. It looks like at least for tomorrow, the weather is going to be absolutely outstanding. Hey, I go away for a day and all you know what breaks loose. All sorts of stories to discuss. Steve was mentioning the story about the shared revenue deal. I have some thoughts about it. We are going to discuss it. Let's see. What else happened of interest in the news? Oh, yes. The former president got indicted. Now, let me give you some perspective as somebody who was a federal prosecutor and who drafted indictments and presented them to the grand jury for the better part of, certainly over a decade. I don't care how you spin it. It is never, ever, ever a good thing to see your name on the top of an indictment, United States of America versus. Never a good thing. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be discussing the charges and what it means politically for Donald Trump moving forward. The numbers are out. The state residency, the local residency rule that was implemented a few years back that previously stopped city employees from moving outside of the city. Well, the numbers are in. It is staggering how many city employees decided to bail on the city of Milwaukee. Why do we think that was? And more details on the deputy that was dragged at the lakefront involving, it all started with a stolen car. The number of stolen cars that they are finding at the lakefront is staggering, which raises the question about why aren't we doing more to deal with the people that are stealing cars. We've got that and a lot more coming up. Don't go anywhere. The Wagner Show starts right after the top of the hour news.